Will you read Clinton's book eagerly? No, says Tom Wolf, who wrote I Am Charlotte Simmons. I'll get what news is in it from the newspapers. No, says P.G.R. Rourke. Is there anything we don't know about Bill Clinton? I know stuff about him that I don't know about my best friends and that I don't want to know. Well, yeah. Hey, guess what, P.J.? You know that because your party spent $80 million to get into his pants. Yes, says Ron Suskind, who's a counter former treasurer. Oh, okay. He's O'Neill's partner in that book, Paul O'Neill. No, says Dave Barry, who will... I have already listened to Clinton for 8 years. That's in actual listening time. What could he reveal? Dieting secrets? You know, I've never liked Dave Barry. There are people who just swear by him. They think he is the funniest man in the world, and trust me, it's not jealousy. You know, I read paper every day, and I run into his column. If it's kind of a spiffy headline, I'll read it, and I just don't see it. He's better than that Mallard Fillmore, or is that the name of that duck cartoon? But that ain't saying much. Yes, says Donna Brazile. Clinton will pack bookstores across the country and remind voters about 8 years of peace and prosperity. That's what's at stake in this election. Here we go. Maybe, says John Stewart. I'm curious, but what is it, 1,000 pages? I got a family. Now, see, that's a joke. That's all right. Going through the big stack of stuff. Britney Spears injured. Pop star Britney Spears was hospitalized Tuesday after injuring her knee on the shoot of her new music video, Outrageous. Spears, 22, had just filmed scenes with Snoop Dogg in New York when her knee gave out. Spears had arthroscopic surgery Wednesday to remove floating cartilage in her knee. No word on how this will affect the second part of her Onyx Hotel tour, scheduled to resume June 22 in Hartford, Connecticut. Her publicist did not return calls. You know what the sad news about this? If Britney's knee doesn't come back all the way, she may have to learn to sing. Michael Moore's 911 ignites Hollywood night. A quote from Drew Barrymore, I never come to premieres, but I'm so here on this one. I'm looking forward to this more than anything in the world. Points for you, Drew. A lot of us look to Michael Moore to uncover the real truth, said Cameron Manheim, noted Democrat. DiCaprio laughed at a clip showing Britney Spears pledging her trust in Bush. An opening montage of Bush, Cheney, and Rice being painstakingly made up before a news conference inspired an Oh My God from Gary Shandling. Actress Lily Sobieski turns 22 today, brought to tears by the film. She suggested it should be required for everyone in America to see as part of their education in high school. Moore said the celeb turnout left him stunned and honored. All right, here's a whole bunch of stuff from the same damn page. USA Today, talking about Reagan and his damn legacy. Charming man. The sun finally set on Ronald Reagan, but he left an everlasting bright dawn for America. His freedom-loving spirit ended the Cold War. Yeah, the Russians sat around and thought, Ronnie's got spirit. Let's put our guns away. That's how things work. And tore down the Berlin Wall. You know, for an old guy, he was 70 or something. When he tore down that whole wall, his fingers were bleeding. The poor bastard's out there swinging those sledgehammers for weeks. But Ronnie finally tore it down. Good for him. Tore down the Berlin Wall, lifting the hopes of all people. Yeah. His entrepreneurial spirit gave us Reaganomics, which I believe has done wonders for our economy. Yep, if you like recessions. I'm one of those Reagan Democrats who is charmed by the Great Communicator. You know, Reagan got the name the Great Communicator in 1964 or 5. Clinton was 10 times the communicator that Reagan ever was, but with Clinton gave you facts. Ronnie gave you a bunch of, the shining city on the hill. Well, no, Clinton gave you a tax cut and a lower deficit and a smaller budget and fewer government employees and peace and prosperity, but no, we want the vision. I don't want all that peace and prosperity stuff. I don't need that extra money. I don't care if my family and friends have to go to Iraq and die. What I need is a really old guy talking about the shining city on the hill. As the high praises go out en masse, little French for you, for Ronald Reagan, we ought to be careful not to distort his most enduring legacy, his public record. Reagan's two biggest accomplishments, in quotes, the 1980s economic boom and the victory in the Cold War, were largely the result of factors outside of Reagan's control, namely the end of the oil crisis and the emergence of Gorbachev. Meanwhile, the list of failures and abdications of responsibility in the Reagan administration unfurl to the sunset. While trumpeting the virtues of limited government under the radar, Reagan instructed drug tests. Ready? While trumpeting the virtues of limited government under the radar, I'll get it right this time. While trumpeting the virtues of limited government under the radar, Reagan instituted drug tests for federal employees and birthed a drug war that has emptied our wallets and bankrupted our morals. Reagan's stubbornness in Beirut contributed to the deaths of 241 Marines, and his dithering during the beginning of the AIDS crisis allowed for a horrific human toll. After coming into office promising to balance the budget, Reagan's political path of least resistance, increasing spending and cutting taxes, tripled the national debt and left sacrifice to future generations. The purported exemplar of the moral majority paid off his corporate supporters with the worst environmental record in several decades, slashed programs for the poor, vetoed sanctions on the brutal South African government, presided over, did you know, I don't remember the specifics, but somehow Cheney voted to keep Nelson Mandela in prison. Isn't that weird? Someone tell me the specifics, but he cast a vote that no, Nelson Mandela, he don't need to be free. The brutal South African government presided over a permissive regulatory environment that led to terrible corporate scandals and led to an administration in which numerous officials were indicted or resigned in disgrace. Last show we said that was 72. No, it was 138. Workout.com regrets the error. Reagan may look godlike in the artificial light of the momentary media blitz, but the view through a long, clear lens of history is not so pretty. Dan Benbow, San Francisco. You are correct. Also on the same page, I'm not going to bother reading the story, but you know they do the little point and counterpoint. USA Today says, how innocent Iraqis came to be abused as terrorists. Now notice the words they chose, how innocent Iraqis came to be abused as terrorists. Now, the rebuttal was written by this Alberto Gonzalez. That's Bush's lawyer in the White House that told him torture was plenty legal. Let's have as much of it as you want, Mr. President. And his reply is titled, terrorists are different. Now, excuse me, the topic is, how did innocent Iraqis come to be abused as terrorists? And Gonzalez replies, terrorists are different. And just for the sake of argument, let's say that's true. I have said myself, torture could be used in certain extremes. Oh, and you people got so upset with me because I said if we caught Muhammad Atta on the 10th, and, you know, we could put a cigarette lighter under his thumb and make him talk, and he'd save all those lives. Oh, how dare you burn his thumb. Oh, you sheep, just kill me. It's one thing to torture a known terrorist who's hours away from blowing up 3,000 people. It's quite another thing to say, hey, you, darky, you look like a terrorist, and then torturing the guy. I wish people could see the distinctions here. When USA Today says innocent Iraqis abused as terrorists, and this monkey in the White House replies, but terrorists are different. Well, that's not what they said. They didn't ask if it's okay to torture terrorists. They asked, why are you picking up the innocent and torturing them? Just more of this doublespeak hand job we get from this illegal White House. They can't play fair, so they cheat, and the press let them get away with it, and the Democrats say, sure, boys, whatever you want, we'll give you. Another headline on Reagan, mark on judiciary to endure for years. Yes. It would be nice if Kerry were to make this known in very plain, simple language. Mr. Kerry, would you let me write this speech for you? Walk up to the microphone, you say, if Bush wins this election, I guarantee you women will lose the right to have an abortion. You will lose the right to control your own bodies. If this is how you gamble. This is how you set up the deal up front. You watch, Kerry's going to say, if Bush wins, there's a chance you'll know. There's a guarantee. The worst could happen is that Bush wins and he doesn't overturn Roe. Then you think a lot of people are going to say, nee, 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 Kerry was wrong. No, the good news is we saved the women's rights. It doesn't matter. Kerry should be willing to take that trade, nee, 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 to save women's rights. But the thing is, when Kerry gives the guarantee, and if Bush wins, and then yes, we will lose Roe, then Kerry can say, I told you, you wouldn't listen to me. I came to you with the facts and told you up front, if you vote for this man, you're going to be driving to Canada for that abortion. And you're going to be driving to Canada or flying. But no, I promise you, I'll give you money. I'll bet, anybody want to bet, Kerry will not speak plainly on this. Oh, the sainted Abdul. He's going to give it a whole lot of that. But what he's not going to do is calmly look the camera in the eye and say, you women are about to lose your rights. If Bush wins, I guarantee him and his crazy crooked court are going to take your rights away from you, and people like Tom DeLay and Jesse Helms and Jim Inhofe are going to decide who gets an abortion. Will Kerry be that smart? Will Kerry... Gore wouldn't do it. I heard him mention it maybe once. He kind of, oh, in passing, oh, there's a chance it could be possible that you might lose, you know. But no. 4 more years are going by. The older crazies are thinking about retiring, and the minute they retire, Bush is going to get the most Nazi, slappy Scalia clone he can find and put right up there, and boom, now it's going out 6-3, so it's going to be a long time before you women get your rights back. Probably not in your lifetime. They're smart enough, they appoint these judges when they're 40, so they hang around for 40 years. If you women want your rights, just old Bart, vote for Kerry. Here's the thing, USA Today, that whole week, they were just gushing praise. Oh, Reagan this, Reagan this, Reagan that. It was just everything, everything. And now that the week's over, remembering Ronald Reagan, order a copy of the June 7th, 2004 commemorative front page from USA Today. Single illustration also available, professional multicolor printing. They don't give you a price. Now, that would be fair. That's not what they would do. But that's why they put that gushing big bunch of crap on the front page, June 7th, is so they could sell you a copy that you can take home and frame it. So you can put that right next to your pink slip. There you go. Frame the pink slip where you got fired from your job. Put that inside this Remembering Ronald Reagan deal. And then you laminate it. Yeah, that's what you do. Get your pink slip and your A Nation Remembers the Old Coot and laminate that and hang it on your wall. By the way, did you see George Bush's parachute jump? I saw the second one. The first one, I think, was private. God knows we can't have a public parachute jump. But the second one, it showed what a horribly bad idea this was. Yes, it came out okay. But when Bush landed, he landed not hard as in, you know, straight down, but he landed going kind of fast. So basically what he was doing is sliding into home plate on his butt. And he moved, I would guess, 15 feet. At a high rate of speed until friction stopped him. They could not have had him land in a particular spot. When you parachute, you're going to land somewhere. You're going to land, you can do your best to land near something. But anyway, as he was sliding in, he could have easily caught a heel on a little rock or a little indentation in the sand, and then he would have 2 broken ankles, 2 broken femurs, 2 artificial knees. That could have gone very, very wrong. And I think it was stupid. And this, he apparently was flying. He was jumping with, you figure, the best jumper in the world. They're not going to put some new guy up there or some old guy. They're going to get the very sharpest, most experienced, best judgment guy they can to fly the president back to Earth. And even then, like say, it was a hard landing. And he could have broken both femurs, and then he would have been the rest of his life. They'd be, oh, poor George, he tried to be a man, and he broke his femurs. That just was not a good idea. Having had 2 broken femurs, I cringed when I saw that happen. And oh, when I had them, I was a kid. I was 16. I wouldn't even want to have them at 80. Ready to go, George. Moving onward. Moviegoers show a big appetite for Super Size Me. Now, you know what this is about. This guy, some guy went to McDonald's every day and ate every meal every day, and he supersized everything. So he got the supersized breakfast and whatever all you can get. Then you go back for lunch, get supersized everything, go back for supper, supersize everything. During the day, if he somehow felt hungry, he'd go back and get some pie or something like that. Anyway, did this for 30 days and then did a movie about it. And they say the movie is doing great business. Please tell me how. Tell you what. I'll go eat at some restaurant. Say Arby's. They're a little healthier than McDonald's. I'll go eat at Arby's every day for a month and make a film of it. You want to watch me eat for a month? Oh, yeah, I'm going to stand in line in the July sun. Oh, I want to see Barkup eat a sandwich. Oh, I want to see Barkup eat a sub sandwich. Oh, I just can't stand how good this movie's going to be. What is up with who is paying to see this film? Well, not the pro-McDonald people. Republicans, maybe? No? Who wants to see some guy eat at McDonald's for a month? Fast food people aren't going to want to see it. I can't see why Republicans would want to see it. I can't see why Democrats, old people, young people, teenagers. Wouldn't you rather see Van Helsing or that Riddick or, you know, some some of those really, that there's a really horrible movie coming out with Ben Stiller and a Dodgeball. Oh, it looks like the most retarded movie. No, I'll take that back. The movie that looks more retarded is White Chicks, with the Wayans brothers dressing up like white chicks and then acting like men with a skirt and a blonde wig. I mean, you know it's going to make a bazillion dollars, and it's going to be all fart and poop jokes, everything in there. How many times can the dog bite the guy in the nuts? Oh, yeah, and Ben Stiller, he's the king of that. But Hollywood, what's gone wrong with you? They know they're going to make $1 million or $100 million. It's like to get $10 million per fart joke and $10 million every time the dog bites the guy's nuts. And so you get a whole movie full of fart jokes and nut biting. I'm sold. I remember when they had movies with scripts and plots and stuff.
Wait a minute. What did I do?
Trio documentary examines the N-word. Now, I don't know what a trio is. I assume it's a network that I don't get on my old-style Dish Network. I got the old Dish Network, and we don't get Trio. I've never heard of Trio before. I assume it's a network on some satellite. But here's the deal. Pop culture cable channel Trio premieres the original documentary, The N-Word, July 4th, which looks at the roots and impact of the racial epithet. Hard to say, epithet. The film features interviews with celebrities including Chris Rock, Ice Cube, Whoopi Goldberg, Russell Simmons, George Carlin. George Carlin? They let a white guy in there. And Samuel L. Jackson. Now, Samuel L. Jackson has a right to use the N-word. The program will air during Chuck D's stint as Trio's guest programmer July 2 through 10. Very confusing. It premieres on the 4th, but it's going to air between the 2th and the 10th. So no telling. But since I don't get Trio, it sure would be nice if somebody out there who gets Trio could tape this and mail it to me. That would be extra cool. And I would trade you something, you know, a month of Barcup Radio. That's worth, well, 50 cents. But you might think it's worth it to mail a tape. A tape's what, a buck? A little postage. But yeah, I would appreciate it if someone could tape The N-Word on the Trio channel July 4th at 9 p.m. Oh, yeah, nothing. That's what I want to do the evening of July 4th. About the time it gets dark, I want to get into a serious discussion about The N-Word. It's probably going to be on more than once, so if somebody could tape that, that would be cool. Oh, the stack's getting smaller. I love it. Oh, check this out. This is part of the Reagan tribute. Father fears that son's sacrifice in Beirut will be forgotten. A flagpole stands outside the condo where Jack and Judy Young live in Morristown, New Jersey. Jack put it up when they moved in. Natural enough for an Army vet and the father of two Marines. Today, as ceremonies continue for Ronald Reagan, the American flag will fly from the top of the pole. Jack Young, whose son Jeff was killed in the 1983 suicide bombing of the Marine barracks in Beirut, will not lower it to half staff. It is mean-spirited, I know, the father says, but this just opens wounds. The barracks bombing was a huge embarrassment for the Reagan administration. Oh, yeah, let's all look at it as far as how much it embarrassed the old donkey. My God, it was more than an embarrassment for him. And devastation for the families of the 241 men killed. The peacekeeping mission, prompted by the bombing of the U.S. Embassy in Beirut 6 months earlier, ended with the remaining troops leaving Lebanon. This is where the terrorists learn that we will turn and run. Has got nothing to do with Mogadishu, and Clinton didn't start that anyway, but the lying sons of bitches always want to blame Clinton. But this is where they learned. Clinton semi was responsible for the 18 lost in Mogadishu, but Reagan killed 241 with his abject stupidity. And they just let it go. I'll respect Reagan as a president, Jack says. But this is part of history that should be told, and it should be told on the front page. The Youngs and other Beirut families have tried to help the families of the Americans killed in subsequent terrorist attacks. Judy, now 64, started a support group for families of those killed in Lebanon. She is now a vice president of Gold Star Mothers, women whose children have died while serving in the military. And you know, this one of the most often forwarded emails is Hillary refused to meet with the Gold Star Mothers. And they just keep lying and keep lying. Finally, the poor Gold Star Mothers website had to put up a giant sign right at the top of the page, right next to hello. They had to put up a giant sign, please stop lying. Mrs. Clinton did never refused to meet with us. We were in town one day when she wasn't expecting us, and she was out of town, and so it's true. We wanted to meet her, and we're not able to, but we didn't call in advance. She had no idea we were coming to town, and she was elsewhere. So the idea that she thumbed these people who's lost children is just another piece of bullshit that the Republicans, they can't win fair, so they have to cheat. If they tell you what the Clinton record is, they look great, so they have to lie, they make shit up, and the gullible people believe it. Oh, yeah, 25 minutes, this is going to be a great rant. Opinion line. This is a little snippets of what everybody thought about Reagan. Lou Cannon, reporter and author of President Reagan, Role of a Lifetime. One of the keys to Ronald Reagan's political effectiveness is that he was consistently underestimated by his adversaries. Reagan encouraged this underestimation because he realized it was an advantage to be taken lightly. Just like Bush, he just pretended to be stupid. Just like Bush, he just pretended to fall asleep while talking to the Pope. Just like Bush, he acted like he couldn't recognize his own cabinet members just to fool the other guys. What a great tactic. When he was running for governor of California, someone asked Reagan what kind of governor he would be. I don't know, he said. I've never played a governor. He quipped. Oh, yeah, that's just the funniest, most clever quip I've ever heard. He defeated Pat Brown, the incumbent governor, by nearly a million votes. Well, I don't know what happened out there, so who knows. Reagan was subsequently underestimated. Now, check out this big lie. Reagan was subsequently underestimated in 1980 by President Carter, who, like Brown, thought the former actor would be an easy mark. Reagan carried 44 states. Now, hold on. If you remember, Carter kept asking Reagan to debate. Reagan kept saying, no, I can't debate you. I'm a monkey. I have no brain. There's no way I'm going to debate you. And they said, you got to debate or your chicken bark, bark, bark. And then finally Reagan said, okay, I'll debate you a couple of days before the election. One time before the election. One debate a few days before the election. So even if he committed the monster gaffe, people say, oh, that one day, my gosh, give the man a break. He's old. Come on. Who doesn't forget a name now and then? And all. So they designed it to where if Reagan screwed up monstrously huge, that all they had to do was get through a couple of days and it would be over. That's how they set it up. They set it up that way because he is a monkey, because Carter knew the issues and Reagan didn't. All Reagan could do was say, like the monkey, less taxes, more guns. That's all he knows how to say. Okay, this next monkey, Peter Robinson, Reagan's speechwriter. That's all you got to know. He's going to lie his ass off. Ronald Reagan would never have felt at home hobnobbing about Hegel, Hegel, H-E-G-E-L, or particle physics in the faculty lounge of a university, but he read widely and wrote constantly, and he took his conclusions so seriously that he organized his entire life around a few sacred propositions. Bullshit. Plain and simple bullshit, including the importance of liberty, dynamism of free markets, and the fundamental wisdom of the American people. To the 40th chief executive, ideas mattered. Bullshit. He's a lightweight monkey who couldn't think, so he memorized three things. He memorized the importance of liberty, the dynamism of free markets, and the wisdom of the people. If he could remember those three things somehow... Did he have them tattooed on his hand? Did he have them stenciled on the inside of his hat? Did he have them maybe written on the inside of his tie? Because all he had to do is remember those three things, and this idiot's trying to make him out like some intellectual. Please. Hayes Johnson, Pulitzer Prize winner, author of Sleepwalking Through History, America in the Reagan Years. Ronald Reagan was the great political wizard of American politics, more than any of his presidential predecessors, more even than his idol, Franklin Roosevelt, he had the ability to create a mood that dispelled the darkness. What the F does that mean? What kind of idiot bullshit is that? At a time when Americans... This is good. At a time when Americans desperately wanted to believe again... Ready? At a time when Americans desperately wanted to believe again, after a series of disasters from assassinations, riots, and failed presidencies... He reassured the nation and made most citizens feel good. His enduring legacy will be the power of personality to uplift and transform the national spirit. You are lying. Yes, it's true that we had no big assassinations while Reagan was in office because only the Republicans assassinate political leaders. What an idiot, because Kennedy and Martin Luther King were trying to move the country forward in 1968. They were effing murdered by the Republicans. And so, yeah, when Ronnie got in there, people felt better because the murdering stopped. There's going to be people say the same thing about Bush. Oh, thank goodness Bush is in there. We're not going to have all this impeachment and investigation stuff. Right, because it's only the Republicans who shoot people, file impeachment papers, and investigate everybody all the time, constantly, for no reason, with no proof, with no chance of finding any proof. So, yeah, they're right in that regard. It's like you got a town with no policemen. Well, they had the fewest arrests. Well, sure. If there's no cops, there's going to be fewer arrests. That doesn't mean it's safe. That just means there's fewer arrests. What kind of monkey logic does this world turn on? Peter Schweizer, Hoover Institute fellow and author of Reagan's War, the epic story of his 40-year struggle and final triumph over communism. He did it himself, old Ronnie. Damn, he has a strong will. He just made all the Russian tanks turn into daisies with his strong will. Today it is fashionable to describe the victory in the Cold War as inevitable. Wasn't the Soviet system doomed to collapse anyway? Others believe that credit largely belongs to Gorbachev, but this victory belongs to Reagan. And the reason it belongs to Reagan, little sidebar, is because he's not Nixon. Remember, that's number one. The Republican Party was in such shit through the 70s that they had to come up with somebody that wasn't Nixon. They came up with an actor, and the minute he got in office, he got shot, so this legacy thing just blew up all over the place. They just made shit up. If the sun came up, it was because St. Reagan did it. If the sun didn't come up, it was because the evil Democrats caused it all to happen. And just make shit up about Reagan. All you gotta do is not be Nixon and get shot, and you're a legend. Material now available from both sides of the Cold War reveal Reagan tipped the scales for victory. Bullshit. There is no material from our side because Bush locked it all up. Talk about material available now. Where? Bush locked it up. It's gone. We can't see it. We don't know what's in Reagan's papers because they're hiding it. The crimes are in there. We know that's why they're hiding it. But everybody just letting him get away with this. You take all the proof you can find, lock it in a box, bury it in the ground, and then say, show me the proof. Well, we can't. You buried it. These documents also demonstrate the Kremlin leaders... Oh, you're just going to love this. These documents also demonstrate that Kremlin leaders had a grudging respect for their adversary, as KGB file notes for Reagan, word and deed are one and the same. Now, I don't believe that. And if it is actually true that that is in a file note written by a KGB member, Christ, you could probably... I've got 1,300 and something issues on the internet. You could probably go back and take a sentence somewhere that made me sound like a Republican. Twist the story, pretend. Don't look at the facts. You know those little charts I'm always running on BarCop.com? Those are the facts. The one where it shows the stock market zooming out of sight, that was the Clinton years. When it shows unemployment dropping to near zero, those were the Clinton years. When they show the budget that skyrocketed, when they show the debt tripling, that's the Republicans. When they show the debt being cut in half, that's Clinton. Those are the facts. But when you get away from the facts, you get a, oh, the shining city on the hill made me feel good, and that's what I remember about Reagan. You got a hand job from Reagan. Well, from Reagan's handlers and the BFEE. And the coup de grace, Peggy Noonan, Peggy Noonan. What do you say about Peggy Noonan? Peggy Noonan, Reagan's speechwriter and author of What I Saw at the Revolution, A Political Life in the Reagan Era. Ronald Reagan talked to my son when he was an infant by phone. Reagan called me, and I asked if he'd say hello to my son, and I put the phone to his ear. I don't know what Reagan said, but my son began to burble and gurgle in my arms. See, now when she talked about my young son, I'm thinking 3, 4, 5. No, she's holding a little thing in her hands. It's burbling and gurgling in my arms. I took the phone away and said, Mr. President, he's laughing. What did you say? He said he told him his plans for Social Security reform. Now, isn't that the cleverest quip? That's even more clever than the last one. About, I don't know, I never played a governor. Oh, the wit of this man. Who could deny? Oh, this has got Shakespeare, Mark Twain, those guys don't even know how to put a... This man, he is the writer. He is the commanding chief of all the verbal word. Oh, the quips, the wit, the snap judgment of the man, the sharpest mind ever to be in Washington, Ronald Reagan. Everyone online in Washington to view his casket had a story about Reagan. I thought he was what a president should be, one unknown, unnamed person might have said. Another might have said, he showed the world America could be strong again. Yeah, by trading with hostages, by going back on his word. He got elected because he said, we're not going to have any more of that terrorist bullshit. And when he got in there, he sent them Stinger missiles, the son of a bitch. A third liar said, he made us feel hopeful. He ended the Soviets. Yeah, he wiped out Russia. Whatever they say, if you put it in her book, it would probably form a little narrative that could be called Why America Loved Reagan. It would have to be a pretty big book.
Bart Pop Radio. If you don't know, we're not going to tell. Let them be doctors and lawyers.